You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10:59 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO's zine, The Boo Beat, is back with a second issue, featuring KBOO's program guide, interviews with local activists and community members, spotlights on local businesses, on-the-ground reporting, and fun quizzes and crosswords. Our zine has its finger on the pulse of Portland, and you don't want to miss it. To snag your copy, visit kboo.fm/zine.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Solve, an environmental nonprofit bringing communities together in Oregon and Southwest Washington to clean and restore local neighborhoods and natural areas and foster a culture of environmental care and community pride. More info on getting involved at solveoregon.org.
How about your mic? Are you good? Okay, well, we'll wait for Ty to get us.
There we go. Yeah. I got it.
I hear you.
How alarming and charming it is to be a farming. Okay, here we go. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning, Glenn.
It's the second Tuesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It must be time for the dirt bag.
I think it's actually Wednesday.
Did I say Tuesday?
You did.
It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
The second Wednesday.
Second Wednesday, yep. And here we are again after how many, many.
I'm not sure that your mic's on there. Jim's mic on there? I'm only hearing him through the... Try it again, he says.
Can you hear me now?
Maybe a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah. Not a whole lot, though.
How about now?
Nope.
It's Jim talking.
Well, you're probably being picked up through my mic a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll just, until we get your mic hot, I'll say this is Glenn Andreessen. Here beside you now until 12 noon, and to my right, the audience is left... Jim Gilbert.
Yes.
All the way in from
Liberal Oregon.
Yep, outside of Molalla, which you'll tell us later a little bit. You've got some, you've got a little something going on out there, a little something, something.
It's been a yesterday was a very busy day actually in Salem. And then,
well, just hang on there. We don't have your mic hot yet, so we're going to get there. But I'll run down our program here today, a full program. We will start with our plant of the month. We're going to talk about almonds. I don't know that we've actually had that as our plant of the month, but we'll certainly be able to talk about that. Also, we do welcome your questions, our listener questions here, 503-231-8187 if you have a gardening question or an answer to our garden stumper, which will happen at about half past the hour. Then we touched on this a little bit last year, but last month. Well, it was last year now, on what to look for when selecting a fruit variety or just plant in general for our region. That's important. As I mentioned on our website, there's many places where you can find plants for sale, but are they all appropriate for this area? So we'll talk about that. Also, we are well into dormant pruning season, and so what are we talking about then, and when, what to wait on? There are certain things we shouldn't be pruning now. After the garden stumper, we'll talk about, we're not really going to talk about seed starting now. It's really too early. There are a few things that you could, sure, go ahead and try to start inside, probably nothing outside. Then farm stands, a way to directly support your local farmer. We'll talk about that, or Jim will talk about that. And growing citrus in containers. Also, our Dirtbag Dictionary, disease resistance. I don't know that we've ever talked about that. And what I'm trying to understand. Ty, do we have Jim? Are you hot?
Is Jim back on the air?
Maybe. Is he on?
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you very loudly. Maybe you're on.
I'm here.
Let's swing you over another mic.
Yeah.
See if that would help.
Oh boy.
Try that one there, Jim.
Here, Rib. What, this one? No, that was
this one here. Try that. Oh, yeah, that's going to be a hot mic.
Let's get that up there so you can...
There you go.
Does that work?
Yep, that sure does.
Okay, great. I had a lot to say.
We got two mics now.
Yeah. Okay.
So, oh, yes, yeah, so what I'm trying to understand this month, and I thought I talked about this before, but it had been years ago because it's been one of my earliest, trying to understand when people... mostly incorrectly use the term déjà vu. What I think oftentimes is meant by that, when they say, you know, this is, you know, a déjà vu all over again, it means they're just repeating something that in fact happened to them before. But technically, that's not what the term means. Mm-hmm. It means you have this feeling that it happened before, but it didn't. And there's some scientific explanations for it. So it's really not experiencing the same thing again. It's just that feeling that you have. And I don't mind the word being usurped, but I would like then to have a replacement for what it really means, if you get my drift. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jim's looking a little perplexed yeah, there.
I'll work on that one.
Yeah. Okay. On with the show. We're ready to go now. So once again, if you have any gardening questions, 503-231-8187. You know, if there's going to be a month that is the least amount of gardening, it could be this month.
Yeah.
For outside, you know, actual gardening. I mean, there's pruning that we can do. Pruning. But as far as planting, it's not the best month for planting, even bare roots.
Well, you know,
I mean, you can.
Well, it's maybe not the best, but it's okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that this is the least likely month of being outside gardening. Now, you know, oftentimes seed packets will say plant as soon as the soil can be worked or prepared. Well, if you have soil like I do, that can be every day of the year. Well, not if it's frozen or raining or whatnot. But in other words, it's not going to clod up or whatnot because it has ample amounts of organic matter in it.
One of the challenges that I've seen this month, we have planting beds out at the nursery where we have they're covered with weed mat, landscape fabric, mm-hmm. or in some cases plastic. And, of course, the soil underneath those is in pretty good shape and easy to plant in. And we are planting right now.
But you're not planting seeds.
No.
No, that's what I'm talking about here. Yeah.
But those atmospheric rivers that flowed by, the soil in general is pretty wet, and that's probably and especially if it's a heavy soil, that's going to be more difficult to plant into. I wouldn't advise it if it's like you dig into it and it's like mud.
Right.
You don't want to be planting in mud.
And just to reiterate my position, I'm not saying that we can't or shouldn't garden. I'm just saying this is the month where there's probably the least amount of gardening that is done.
This weather is amazing, although today driving up is pretty foggy and cold, but the sunny days are just incredible, and I've been doing a lot of pruning, and it's just really enjoying being
out in the sun. Well, what has been the tool that you've used the most in the last 5 weeks in this case?
Well, I would say, I'm going to just say it's my pruning saw.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not your chainsaw, just your saw.
My hand saw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. because I've been doing a lot of fig pruning, and figs are pretty easy to cut. I don't need a chainsaw, and even some of the branches that I'm trying to bring them down to a lower level.
Yes.
So I'm cutting things that are sometimes 3 to 4 inches in diameter, but with a nice little silky saw that I've got, it doesn't take very long, and it's kind of nice exercise. And
That's what I started doing yesterday. Was I just have the one fig, but it's and doing the same thing, getting it down.
Yeah.
I told my wife that I'm taking a lot off, but they just go to waste because they're way up there.
Maybe next month we can talk a little bit more about figs because I got some new ideas about that. So
about pruning figs,
pruning and fruit production.
Uh huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I think the tool that I've used the most recently is a soil sifter that I use not only for soil, but compost to make my home brewed potting soil. And I've been doing a lot of propagating of bee plants, essentially.
Mm, nice.
So, but of course, now I got into the electric or the battery chainsaw yesterday, and then I'll be firing up the chipper probably today, this afternoon, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So that'll be starting to get a lot of use now, too.
Yeah. The weather needs to, we need to comment on this weather. I mean, I don't know. Have you had a frost in Portland?
Yes.
Okay.
But it hasn't been below 30.
Yeah. Our coldest has been one night. We get down to 26. I think we had another 27. So far, we're in zone 9B.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed, that I have lots of volunteer potatoes, and they're usually the first things that go. And there was a little bit of browning on some of them, but I think some of my potatoes plants are 2 feet tall now.
Crazy.
And you look at it, and you know that it's cold because some of the leaves are yellow in the middle. Mm-hmm. Which means that there's just not much nitrogen available to them because that's temperature dependent or bacterial dependent in the soil. And if they don't have it, they can't, if they don't have those microorganisms to free up that nitrogen, then it's not available. And it's just too cold for them for that to happen for the most part. The one right next to my house, which is a volunteer, it's very healthy looking.
Yeah, probably your tomatoes aren't doing so well right now.
The tomatoes are long gone. It would have been a good year to keep those, though, just to see how long they would hold on.
Yeah, put a little plastic cover over them or something. You know?
I mean, they are, from what I understand, a perennial plant in the tropics where they're more native to. Okay, well, on with the show here. Let's get to the plant of the month, and then we'll get to our first musical selection.
Okay.
Almonds.
So, Yeah, so it's a kind of a nice story that I can tell about almonds. First, the first part of the story is importing varieties from the Nikita Botanic Garden in Yalta, probably 10 years ago or more. The challenge with almonds typically is they bloom too early. And I was very pleased to discover late blooming almonds that the Soviet Union breeders had created many years ago, and was able to get them through the USDA plant import process and bring them to Oregon.
Was it in what form did you bring them?
Cyanwood.
Okay.
Yeah, they sent me cyanwood, which I grafted then here, and they've proven to be pretty darn good producers. But typically, they're blooming about the same time as peaches. The commercial almond varieties out of California probably bloom 2 or 3 weeks before that, and that's the problem because of frost and so forth.
Almonds in California are start in February because that's where the bees go.
That's right. That's right. So. We had a really good harvest year, not this past year because we didn't pay much attention to it. We're too busy doing other things. But I had so many from the previous year that what I've been doing, my eyesight's not great, so I like to listen to books. And there's a book called, there's two books that I have been listening to. The first one was Astoria, which is a really fun book to read and listen to. And then the second one is called 2 Years Before the Mast, which was actually written by a distant cousin of mine.
Huh.
And it's a fascinating story about a college student in Boston in the 1830s who signed on to a sailing ship and ended up in California. And just his stories about sailing and about California and all are fascinating to listen to. And I have a big bag of almonds that I crack while I'm doing that. And then we make this, we have our own recipe for tamari almonds. And they are so darn good.
Do you just treat them like any other almond? I mean, as far as roasting them or...
Yeah. Well, what we do for tamari almonds is we make up a solution of tamari, a little bit of sugar, soak them overnight, and then roast them on a pan.
Uh-huh.
But they're really excellent, really, really tasty. And any listeners, anybody who has almonds and wants the recipe, let me know. Because, it is very superior to the ones I've purchased in the store, the tamari almonds. So anyway, sometime, depending on your situation and all, birds also like to eat the almonds on the trees. So what we do typically is the almonds are basically like a shriveled peach. they look like that when they're they're ripe, and inside is the pit, which is the almond, because an almond is actually a prunus. It's related to same with peaches and nectarines and cherries and plums and so forth. So picking them off the tree is a good way to avoid having them fall on the ground and be eaten by squirrels or birds, and it works pretty well when they're ripe. So that's what we do. Well, in California, of course, they harvest almonds by shaking the trees, and all the nuts fall on the ground.
Similarly, from what I understand, how filberts or hazelnuts do they still shake the trees for those?
Typically, they don't shake them; they just fall on their own.
I remember back in the day when I was moving pipe on a truck farm in the Willamette Valley. That's what they shook the trees there, and then which is why they keep a very they will flail the top layer of dirt and leaves and just make it completely smooth, and then they blow the fallen nuts into a center row, and then they come by and sweep them. So I'd be curious to find out what they do now.
Yeah, well, they have a lot of hazelnuts in our neighborhood, and I've never seen anybody shake a tree. They just let them fall and gather. They do have the same kind of ground cover like you're talking about.
Or no ground cover.
No ground cover. Just
right.
And they just go. And there's a lot of vacuum noise in the fall as they vacuum them up.
Huh.
But yeah, they don't shake the trees in our area. But the,
So back to almonds. Is it just this one variety then, this late blooming one that's appropriate for our area?
There's several varieties.
But they're all late bloomers.
The ones that we offer, and Seascape is one of them. Oracle is one of them. Primavera, Nikita's Pride. Those are all the late blooming types, and garden centers in the neighborhood should have them. I mean, we sell to a lot of different garden centers, and of course, One Green World you can get them there, and also by mail order from One Green World for sure. So,
okay.
I think it's a pretty neat crop for our area, and they are pretty disease resistant. I would say of the Prunus genus, they are probably about the most disease resistant, easy to grow trees.
Is a pollinizer needed?
You'd like to have. It's good to have two varieties.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our plant of the month. Let's get into our tunes, and it's a continuation of the theme from last month, because we had so many calls on the Garden Stumper, I think, that we didn't have time to get into all of the tunes that we listened to, but we did listen to the first one, so I have another one now from that, and this is Sly Stone, who died last year. Sly and the Family Stone, quite an innovator, and I think part of the reason that it had an impact on me, which is the theme, these artists that had an impact on me, is that it might have been the first time I was exposed to a band that had horns in them. I mean, the Blood, Sweat, and Tears in Chicago was coming on, but this wasn't known for horns in their band. But anyway, Sly and the Family Stone. This is from 1969 album. I got it from his whole complete catalog, so I don't know the name of the album, but from 1969, and it still sounds fresh, especially with those horns. This is Sing a Simple Song.
Walking in the street. Time is passing, I grow older, things are happening fast. All I have to hold on to is a simple song at last. Let me hear you say,
fun.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we still have Jim's mic on, Ty? Try it again, Jim.
I said
there
I,
we go.
Yeah, you hear me now. I said, yeah. I never heard that before, Glenn. That was,
really?
Yeah, that was fun.
Huh.
And I also just wanted to ask you a quick question.
All right.
You know, I sent you that link to the Brownsmead Flat song.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's about the Peter Iredale. Did you see it?
No, I saw it, but I
haven't listened
once
to it.
Got out of my viewpoint.
We should play that, at least part of that, sometime.
Okay.
On the show. That'd be fun.
Yeah, the Peter Iredale. I still need to find those photos.
Yes, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I'll talk to one of my brothers to see if he has a digitized copy. I thought I did. I just have the actual photographs. I can bring those and show you, though.
Yeah, well, I'd love to see them.
Okay, yeah, Sly Stone. I'm not sure how old he was, but not a premature death.
Sadly, there are a few of us that are moving along in years.
Yes, yes, yes. Including my folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dad will be 96 in March.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah, he's still fun to be with, but he's not the same.
Yeah. Well, I wonder ask him what his clues are to have reached that August age.
Yeah. When I call him, this is way off gardening, but I call him, I often talk to him about things that happened long ago. Like I asked him on December 7th, I called and said, what do you remember then? He would have been 11 at the time, and he was in Astoria at that time. And and he had good memories.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to, even on the headlights on their vehicles, they had to black them all out with just a little triangle to show light through at night. And they had blackout curtains and other things.
Wow.
So, yeah. But let's get to what to look for when selecting a fruit variety, and this could be true with any plant, because not all plants are appropriate for our areas. If I was going to say, I'd say, well, you might want to stay away from the big box stores. You know, that wouldn't be 100% right. But,
well, I can tell you a couple of things about local stores. I mean, besides, well, we'll talk about what to look for. I think that's more important, sure. And certainly, all the years that I've been doing this work, which that's been the goal of our efforts, is to find and propagate fruit varieties that are well adapted to the Pacific Northwest. And I'm talking about west of the Cascade Mountains, because there's a big difference between the west and the east.
Mm-hmm.
And virtually, as far as I know, I mean, except for little islands like what we do these days, very little breeding work has been done with that focus in mind. And so a lot of plant varieties, fruit varieties come, they do great. They do great east of the mountains or in the Midwest or the East Coast. But we have a very interesting climate here, and so disease. We have a lot of rain in the winter and spring, and that's a disease. It's a lot of disease pressure on plants, and so you learn you can go out and just buy a peach tree and plant it, and you'll watch it get peach leaf curl.
This is going to tie right in, and we'll talk about this right after your part here on disease resistance.
Yeah, and then you find out that isn't a good variety for this region. And apples, of course, there's diseases with apples.
And these trees may grow, and maybe it can even say thrive, but that doesn't mean that they're going to produce acceptable fruit.
Yeah, scab is a big issue with apple, pear. I mean, so I think the important thing is buying your fruit tree from a reputable source, and that might be where we can start talking about box stores. If you go to a garden center and the people speak with authority, they have or somebody can tell you, yes, we know about this variety and it does well here.
Where was it grown, maybe, or where did it come from?
Yeah, that can give you some confidence they're talking about the right thing. And we can certainly in the show talk more about varieties, and if any listeners have questions about varieties that we might know answers about, we'd love to answer them. But of course, there's a when I think about fruits that are easy to grow versus ones that are more difficult, I have a kind of my own personal knowledge of that. I mean, for example, persimmon forgetting the fact of ripening time, which is another characteristic, but the plant itself, persimmons are about as disease and pest resistant as any fruit tree that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue besides pest and disease resistance is ripening time. And with climate change, this could be changing a bit, but generally speaking, early ripening is very important because our climate, we have cool nights in the summer. If you go back east in the Midwest, you can have 70 degree nights pretty mm-hmm. reliably or even warmer. But we here, we'll get down into the upper 50s or even low 50s at night. And so you need early ripening to be successful with plants, fruiting plants.
When I was doing a lot more speaking on growing fruit, and there was a chart, I'm not sure where it actually came from, but I modified it, whatnot, and it's the easiest or the hardest to the easiest or easiest to hardest, I can't remember, to grow. And persimmon may have been number one, but it's unfortunate. Really, that's just the reality, is that what a lot of people want to grow are the more difficult ones. I love cherries and peaches, and even apples has a certain amount of, they have a big problem. You don't have a problem with the codling moth and the apple maggot, but you can hardly grow a apple that ripens in the summer that doesn't have that problem in Portland. Fortunately, you're out there where you don't have it yet.
Well, apple maggot doesn't seem to be an issue for us, thankfully, but codling moth, we have that. It's interesting because we have a lot of apples, and I think maybe there's not enough moths to infect them all. So
it doesn't expand to it for its food.
And availability. We just sort them out. An apple that's been infected with had a codling moth in it, they actually will keep fairly well in most cases.
Yeah.
And then when you
you'll have to. I'll have to invite you over and take a look at the apple maggot.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole different ball game. It's hard to salvage those. I do, just because, I don't. I just eat some of the brown spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know why they have not migrated out to Liberal, but but we don't have them, thankfully.
Don't be bringing in uninspected fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so the takeaway here is ask questions, and if they can answer them, then you can feel confident. And you'll probably have to pay a little bit more, but it's worth it.
And I think purchasing, if you're doing mail order purchasing or if you live nearby one of those nurseries like Rain Tree or One Green World or Burnt Ridge. Those three in particular, there's others as well, they've been around for a long time, and what they offer are generally varieties that will do well.
Just one more question here before we move on here. What is your take that I used to see and still do, a lot of folks who buy the what they call, it's the espalier tree, and you just buy them with, they're already four varieties on an apple tree or something like that from a box store. And I don't know quite how to, they already have the plant, so there's not much that can be done at that point. But oftentimes I'll think, those just aren't real. Maybe one or two of the varieties is suitable for our area, but the others, I don't know. I don't know. Just have anything to say on that?
Yeah. Well,
just be wary.
We used to do that. Combination.
Yeah, that's what they call them.
We call them
not espaliers.
Espalier.
That's what they are, but
you can.
Or.
Yeah, that's a challenging thing to do for a nursery because sometimes one of the four won't grow well or won't grow at all,
uh-huh.
and then you have three. And then what three do you have? But that for us, we would put varieties that would do well here in those four, in those situations. But if you're buying it from a nursery that's growing this on the east side of the mountains or somewhere else, you know, the likelihood of them having good Northwest varieties is less than, it's kind of a nice way to grow a tree. It makes it a decorative thing. It takes more care. So
yeah.
You want to be aware of that as well. But look at the variety, and you can do a little research to see if it's one that's suitable for here. For example, Granny Smith, which is, you know, people know what that is. So yeah. They think, oh, gee, Granny Smith. Not generally a good variety for our region. And
for what reason?
It ripens very late.
Okay.
Disease, has more scab problems and stuff.
Yeah.
But you all know, right, and then we talked a couple of shows ago about the postage stamp orchard and the columnar fruit trees, which again, when I first started offering them, growing those, like the first varieties that we got, I got from Canada, from a research station in British Columbia, where they had been selecting for disease resistance, and so the ones like Scarlet Sentinel and Golden Sentinel and North Pole, those were all ones that originally came from there. And now we've offered a new one called White Icicle, which is a light green colored fruit, really delicious, early ripening. And they do, without any issue at all, do nice crops here in our region.
Okay. Well, that's some ideas there on what to look for there. All right. Well, Ty, you ready for the garden stumper? All righty. It's time for the garden stumper. Well, if that didn't get your attention. Okay, Jim, I don't even know what your garden stumper is.
Okay.
Because we had to change what you suggested originally.
Well, and it's one that I think you'll kind of enjoy too because of your connection with bees.
Oh, good.
Basically, there is a very attractive, interesting fruiting tree, evergreen, that... is actually one clue. It's native to southern China. It's related to apples and pears. It's a palm fruit. So, and it will grow well here. I mean, there's a beautiful example of one on about 12th and Clinton Street. It's been there for 60, 70, 80 years. But it rarely bears fruit here. The reason being is that it blooms in the winter. And actually, out at the nursery right now, we have a bunch blooming. Bees are attracted to it. Ladybugs are, flies. I mean, it's a nice fragrance. You know, it could, if we had kept on with this mild weather,
this year is the year.
We might get some fruit. But it's not common to get fruit with this fruit tree. And... the question is, what is it?
Okay. If you know the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, too, it's the same number, if you can believe that, Jim. How efficient is that? 503-231-8187.
231-8187. Okay.
Yep. It reminds me of the player in the orchestra that could make all the rehearsals, but he couldn't make the concert. You know, the fruit tree, you know, it has all these wonderful things, but it doesn't bear fruit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What do we have next here? Well, let's talk about, just briefly, we're running out of time a little bit here, what to prune now.
Mm.
Dormant pruning. I mean, we could have started this in... late November, even, yes?
Sure.
But so dormant. What dormant? Most plants are dormant now, except for the one that's our answer to our garden stumper. Is what would you prune? What do you recommend pruning now?
Well, first go over to the Cully Farm Store and get your pruner sharpened. Oh,
I forgot all about that. Thank you for mentioning that. So, yes, the person with the first correct answer to the garden stumper gets
a free
gardening hand tool sharpened at Cully Farm Store, yep. Northeast 42nd and Alberta.
So with those nice, sharp pruners,
yes.
Go out and prune your apples and prune your pears. Prune your palm fruits and berries. I mean, if you have black currants, for example, which we're doing right now, where you have 4-year old shoots, remove the old ones. You want new ones, younger ones to bear fruit. And
same with blueberries.
Blueberries, grapes.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so maybe everything except what?
Except.
Yeah, maybe that's that would be a shorter list.
And that's another really good question, because with this weather we've been having, there's not much exceptions. We usually wait until March to do prunus, because what we want is good 3 or 4 days of nice, sunny, dry weather so that we get good healing on the wounds. But we've had so many nice days that, you could be pruning your peaches now. And we're actually doing some of that.
Because you look at the forecast and there's not much chance of rain.
No, I think Monday maybe or Tuesday is, and I don't even know if then. But, I mean, I'm not saying I'm sort of overjoyed with this weather, because it makes me worried a little bit about some other things.
What happens when we do get down to 20?
Yes, exactly, because plants are, there's some, buds are swelling.
But this type of weather is perfect for the chilling hours. That we get anything between 32 and 45, is that 40, what it was?
45, yeah.
Yeah, so this is perfect.
I would mention also kiwis.
Yeah.
Really good time to be pruning your kiwis. I've mentioned before about if you prune kiwis too late, you get a lot of sap flow, which I don't like. So they're, this is a good, again, with concerns about too much warmth, you don't want them to start pushing. So get out there and prune those buggers. And if you've got a fuzzy kiwi, you have some cases, you'll have very, very long shoots on them, prune them back. If you take about 2/3 of that shoot off just above a bud, you leave maybe 6 or 8 buds at the base, that's where your flowers will be and your fruit next year. Figs. I'm pruning figs now.
Yeah,
and that's another interesting subject because there's two type. I'm pruning two different types of figs. One, Desert King, which is a San Pedro type fig, and it bears in our climate its only crop on the old wood. So in that case, with Desert King, you don't want to prune off all that old wood, but prune some, because that will produce old wood next year.
Right. Okay, we have a phone call.
Great.
Mitch.
Yeah, no, I've wondered about those beautiful trees on Clinton when I walk past there on my way to the Clinton Street Coffee House, and I'm pretty sure it's the ginkgo biloba.
Well, that's a really good guess, but unfortunately it's not.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on 12th, but it's actually... and there's just a single tree.
Oh, just single. Okay, these were two together.
How far off Clinton? Did you say it was 12th and Clinton?
Yeah, it's right. I'll be even more specific. There's a Buddhist temple right there. The tree is
in front of it.
The tree is on the grounds of the Buddhist temple.
Oh, okay.
Well, that gives
so rush over there.
I'll be interested to hear what you say.
Okay, great.
That's a good guess. Yeah. Can you even eat the fruit on that one?
On a ginkgo?
Yeah.
Well, the fruit, a ginkgo fruit is not, it's a, no.
No,
it has an unpleasant fragrance. People eat the seeds of the ginkgo.
The leaves are extraordinary looking, though.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's an ancient tree. It's one of the
prehistoric,
oldest
even.
The oldest plants in the world. I mean, in terms of when it started, how far back it goes in evolution. It's a fascinating tree.
Yeah. That's a good guess, though.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Okay. Let's see. Do we have another call? Is that what you're saying there? Yes. Okay.
Hello?
Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have an answer for us?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many fruits that we can't grow in our region here, but one that I've always been interested in and I've never tried is bayberry, maybe the Chinese bayberry.
Yeah, I don't know that fruit really well. But
yeah, it's an evergreen. I know it's an evergreen fruit that they grow in China, and they're amazingly delicious fruits. But the trees will grow here, but they won't. They rarely fruit.
Yeah. Do you know why?
I don't know why. I'm not as smart as you guys.
Experience. Let's use that word.
Yeah.
I'm not as experienced.
Yeah.
That's not the one that I have in mind. And I'll have to do a little research to see what.
Yeah, if they even grow.
But how that works. But the winter blooming is the challenge with this particular one.
Okay. Yeah.
It's blooming now.
It's blooming right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're done with the phones, yes? Okay, well, let's move on to our second musical break. Just quickly here, this is Jesse Colin Young. This album in particular, I still do play it quite a bit. And I found out in researching his death a little bit that his... I can see why he changed his name. I shouldn't say that, but, you know, that's a good folksy name, Jesse Colin Young, and he started the Young Bloods. Come on, people now. Anyway, he was born Perry Miller. Jesse Colin Young sounds pretty good. Anyway, this is Ridgetop from his Song for Julie album from 1973. No, that's the wrong one there. Got to have to figure out how to get him the right one at the right time. Okay. Well, let's see what we got here. I mentioned until we get this going here, we're not going to talk about seed starting until next month, but here we come. Ridgetop. Okay. Turn into pies in July. You know, that's a great line, really, that my taxes are high, but I don't believe it's a sin. That's a little different than George Harrison. You know, 19 for you, one for me. Anyway, a little commentary there. How about that?
Okay,
let's talk about farm stands.
Okay. Well, that's...
I mean, you know, we don't see too many of those, you know, so much anymore.
So I spent yesterday in Salem talking with legislators about legislation regarding basically farm stands. And it's kind of a complicated subject, but the basic part is that there's a lot of misinformation out there that was came out, especially this early summer of this year, about how there was talk about restricting farm stands and so forth, and it was actually just the opposite was going on. The challenge, it's kind of one of the things that that's happening right now is there's some groups who do not really support the Oregon's unique land use planning program, which has been around for over 50 years and is why we drive out into farmland when we drive outside of our cities and towns, not more strip malls and subdivisions as in a lot of other states. And I'm a very passionate supporter of that. I mean, where I live, 40 minutes south of Portland, I'm surrounded by hazelnuts and blueberries and cows and vegetable fields. And there's occasional farm stand, which is somebody who's got a farm who wants to sell some of their produce or what they're growing to the public. I think, you know, that's perfectly fine. That's permitted by Oregon's land use planning program. But the challenge is some people really want to get rid of that program. The property rights people or the Oregon Property Owners Association is a group that's really working hard to sort of dismantle it. And they've
dismantled the whole thing or the farm stand part?
The whole thing.
Okay.
In fact, if you go back 20 years to measure 37, the group was called by a different name then, and they were the ones that got that passed, and that was a catastrophe that thankfully we were able to remedy before. Before it got too far.
We re-voted, is that right?
Yeah. And so basically now they're trying to loosen it up so you can have a cafe or you can have a hotel or just do things that really aren't appropriate for farmland, and they have many negative effects, including making the land much more expensive. So a beginning farmer especially wouldn't be able to buy the land and farm it because it's too highly valued for this other purpose that they're advocating for. also, it interferes with farming practices. And Oregon has got agriculture is our second largest economic sector in our state. It brings in billions of dollars. It's very important for, you know, to conservation, climate change, you know, carbon sequestration. I mean, farming is a pretty neat thing, and we grow a lot of food here. And with climate change and other parts of the world becoming more difficult and less water and more heat, I think Oregon's going to be an even more valuable place for agriculture. So,
what's in danger of being lost? Now, I mean, our farm stands, specifically farm stands now, is that what's the issue with that?
Well, the word farm stand is basically the challenge is the definition is being expanded. They're trying to do that.
Who's they?
The Oregon Property Owners Association.
Okay.
And some farm people who want to make more money.
So they want to open it to expand what's allowed?
Yes.
You mean from selling vegetables to offering concerts type thing?
To having prepared food, yeah. Or concerts, having wedding venues, like cafe, you know, hotels. I mean, it's there's a lot of things being, there's just asked to loosen it up.
And what are your thoughts on that then?
Well, there are already many uses allowed on farmland, and I think they're enough. And the people I work with, there was several of us yesterday going around talking to legislators about this because sadly, a lot of people in government and our lawmakers don't have experience with farming, and they, you know, they,
yeah,
they,
sure,
they need to hear from us.
And what was the reception? What was your reception like?
You know, it was very positive. People really liked the fact that we came and talked to them and and told them about, you know, our views on it.
Was it you and other farmers, did you say?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I went with my friend, I and my friend Mike McCarthy, who's an orchardist in Hood River. We went together and talked to several legislators. I always tell them about the, I gave them a handout about the movie. You know,
You know, had any of them heard about it?
Actually, no.
Okay.
They were very happy to get it and to, right. to learn about it. And OregonStory.com.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great story about our state. so, yeah, it's a, I mean, it's important that we do that kind of work because we, you know, legislators, you know, need to know the history.
What's the prognosis then of this expanded? What's it called? The bill, or is there anything about that?
Yeah,
yet?
You know, it's just brand new, and it does. And, I can't
seems
remember.
Like we've talked about this before. I mean, they've allowed, you know, creep for years. I know on Sauvie Island they had a.
There's a place out there on Sauvie Island that's right now pushing the limits of this. You know, it's kind of funny we talk about that, like having a pumpkin patch where you actually bring in the pumpkins. You don't grow them. You just put them around and then you sell other things, you know, as part of that process.
You know, we're not saying that that happens on Sauvie Island, do we?
I think it does, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it is counties are supposed to enforce these things, and it's very hard to do that.
Sure.
Hood River County is a place of a real problem because it's close to Portland. People like to go there, of course, and drive around, and that's fine. And there's Mike's neighbor sells fruit, and which is fine, but that he grows. But when you sell a lot of things that aren't being grown on the farm, then you start getting into like a little convenience store or something.
Well,
you know,
maybe one thing to think about is the rules that they have, or had anyway, when I was involved at the Portland Saturday Market, that you had to be responsible for, say, 50% of the thing. And I think, I don't recall if this was actually right, that you had to be doing the selling. It's just not a hired place. That's Portland Saturday Market. That's not the farmer's market.
Right. Yeah, the farm stand rules right now, basically, you're permitted to sell 25% of things you don't grow, is the general rule. There are...
you have to grow 75%.
That's the general rule, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Again, there are ways of the prepared foods are sort of a different category
we're gonna have to
one thing in this bill was the idea you could have prepared foods but you wouldn't have a menu, so if not lacking the menu means you that somehow makes you not a restaurant.
Well, you'll have to keep us updated on this.
I will. It's an interesting subject and one that's very important to our state. So.
I know that a lot of farms and whatnot, you know, want to be a destination.
Yes.
You know, you have weddings or...
Those things really deserve to be in our small towns and cities, which need that support. And if you've got putting all those cars on narrow rural roads, not only the use of all the fossil fuel that requires, but also just it's very inconvenient for farmers who are nearby who are trying to spray or plow or do other things too. So it's not a compatible use. It's like we don't have factories in our subdivisions and we shouldn't have cafes and hotels in our farmland.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's come back to that we'll just keep up with that.
Sure.
That would be a good thing to do. But now we're out of time, Jim.
Well, as always, it's a pleasure, Glenn.
Whoa, do you want to tell us what the answer is?
Oh, sure.
To the garden stumper?
Yep.
We stumped everybody.
Yeah. Loquat.
Loquat.
Yep.
Yes.
Aerobatria japonica, otherwise known as Japanese medlar.
And, I don't know that I've ever had one.
Yeah, I'll try to.
If you get a crop.
Well, so far, we may have a crop this year, so definitely I'll treat you some.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim, for coming in. Thank you, Ty, for getting up and staying up and helping us out.
And thank you for doing this too, Glenn.
You're very welcome. We will go out with our last musician who passed away last year, and I explained this last year, but we didn't last month, but we didn't really get to play it too much. And this is Green Onions, which was originally by Booker T and the MGs, but one of the MGs was Steve Cropper, and he's the one who died last year. And this is a Roy Buchanan rendition of that, and Roy Buchanan was the I heard him explained once as the best guitarist you've never heard of, but he died in the 1990s. But anyway, this is Steve Cropper with Roy Buchanan playing Green Onions. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month.
Is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.